Hello, here's your KVNF regional newscast for Wednesday, August 30th. In a follow-up to stories reported on the KVNF regional newscast, the Center for Mental Health in Montrose received $488,000 to go toward the emergency crisis clinic in its building. According to the Montrose Daily Press, Senate Bill 207, passed and signed into law earlier this year, appropriated a portion of marijuana tax revenue to give to the state's behavioral health crisis system. The center is sharing an appropriation with Mind Springs Health, which is establishing a similar crisis clinic in Summit County. The center and Mind Springs are, with Access Health System in Durango, members of the same managed service organization called West Slope CASA. The funding split came out of discussions with counties, law enforcement agencies, and judicial branches, with stakeholders working in collaboration. The center is renovating property on South Cascade Avenue to serve as a 24-hour behavioral health crisis clinic. The facility's current floor plan contains 4 beds for overnight stays, a walk-in center, and an area for up to 3 people at a time to receive social detox. Short-term detox for those who need to sober up and can do so without going to an emergency room, or who have not committed an offense for which they can be jailed. Services to be offered at the crisis location include screening, assessment, and stabilization, which would entail observation and connection to resources for continued care. The crisis clinic is also the planned home base for the center's regional mobile crisis team. The long-talked-about natural gas pipeline from the western Colorado Mancos Shale Formation to the Oregon coast has received new life under the Trump administration. The Canadian company proposing the project plans to apply for a new permit at the end of this month. For Inside Energy, Dan Boyce filed this report.
66 trillion cubic feet. That's how much natural gas the U.S. Geological Survey now estimates is locked in the Mancos Shale Formation in western Colorado. The industry thinks there's even more.
It's hard to wrap your mind around.
David Ludlam with the West Slope Colorado Oil and Gas Association.
Even if you're in the industry, it's hard to wrap your mind around. I mean, we haven't begun to grapple as a nation with what we truly have.
That shale formation contains 40 times more gas than originally believed. 66 trillion cubic feet? It's enough to power the whole country for more than 2 years. Ludlam says some companies are drilling in the Mancos right now, but not as much as they'd like.
It's just more profitable in other areas in other states that have a direct connection to bigger markets.
He means overseas markets. The country's other major natural gas fields all have direct access to terminals where the gas can be converted to a liquid and shipped abroad. The catch, not one of these other so-called LNG terminals is located on the West Coast.
I mean, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to permit an LNG export facility in the Northwest.
That's President Trump's chief economic advisor, Gary Cohn, speaking at an international finance summit in April. He's talking about the proposed Jordan Cove terminal in Coos Bay, Oregon. Asian countries are needing a lot of natural gas, more than they can supply themselves.
I mean, just think of the transport time from the Northwest to Japan versus anywhere else.
The Jordan Cove terminal would help the U.S. compete with other gas exporters like Australia and Qatar for that Asian market. Approval for the facility falls to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC.
Very discouraging to have to fight this thing over and over again.
Clarence Adams is a landowner in Douglas County, Oregon. He's discouraged because FERC already did decide on Jordan Cove. They denied permitting the project last year. Twice.
Once they lose, they should lose, period.
Adams opposes because a pipeline serving the terminal would have to be built right across his property. That's one of the reasons FERC denied the project, saying it didn't justify using what's called eminent domain to force pipeline construction through private land. The other was that there weren't any buyers lined up for the gas at the time. Environmental groups argue there are a lot of other reasons to deny Jordan Cove a permit. Lena Moffitt is with the Sierra Club and says Asian countries are doubling down on renewable energy, and this is a step backward.
These kinds of long-term investments, new infrastructure that locks us into expanded gas reliance are not needed.
Unsurprisingly, that investment is exactly what the industry wants. David Ludlam with the West Slope Colorado Oil and Gas Association says long-term contracts signed with foreign buyers are highly desirable.
We're looking for a different type of investor, one that can come in and own reserves in the ground alongside our producers and provide a economic certainty, not an economic boom.
Industry feels things may be shifting their way. Elizabeth Spomer is president and CEO of Jordan Cove LNG.
We've got some momentum. We've got a new administration who's very, very much pro-LNG exports.
The U.S. Senate just voted to confirm two Trump nominees to open FERC seats. Both are considered friendly to oil and gas interests. The Canadian company proposing the terminal, Veresen, says it intends to refile a formal permit application for Jordan Cove by the end of the month. For Inside Energy, I'm Dan Boyce.
A new summer institute launched by the University of Denver is part of an effort to create a global women's leadership network. Eric Galatis has the story.
From record-breaking crowds at the Women's March to ongoing protests in Venezuela and sustained mobilization in Zimbabwe, women are driving movements to resist authoritarianism and create progressive social change. Erica Chenoweth, a professor at the University of Denver's Corbell School of International Studies, brought 17 leaders from across the globe to Colorado this week for a three-day event.
What's really unique about this institute is it's bringing these women together to basically talk with one another about what they've learned from these really difficult grassroots struggles that they've been involved in. And what's particularly unique about leading such struggles as women?
She says in addition to sharing challenges and success stories, activists will have access to advanced trainings from leading experts on waging effective nonviolent campaigns. Chenoweth says after the women head back home, the Inclusive Global Leadership Institute will create a communications platform to help leaders stay connected. Jeanette Vizguerra, a leader with the Denver Metro Sanctuary Coalition, who herself took sanctuary this winter from the Trump administration's crackdown on immigration, met with women working on issues including tax justice in Kenya, gender rights in Pakistan, and LGBT protections in Tunisia. Chenoweth points to Black Lives Matter 5280 and the Safety Pin Box's anti-racism work as examples of local efforts fueled by strong women leaders.
There are all kinds of different actions that women basically have been key in organizing and sustaining that affect us all where we live here in Colorado.
Chenoweth says the goal is to expand this year's pilot class of 17 to 40 or 50 in future years and hopes the institute eventually will lead to a global women's leadership network that can share best practices and mobilize resources and support. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Wednesday. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks for listening.